Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bring us in, babe.
Welcome to
Coco Caliente.
Welcome to this week's episode, and we have a really great guest, but before we get there...
Woot woot, Victor in the house with a baby blooper.
Okay.
And it's less of a baby blooper, more something that I got excited about because as a dad now, I get excited over little things that Arrow does. So Arrow just hit his second leap, right? And if you didn't listen to one of our earlier episodes about this app called the Wonder Weeks, there's this app that you can get when your baby's born or before your baby's born, and it'll track the major developments in his growth, and they are what they call leaps.
It kind of warns us like when he might be acting like a little more fussy or a little more hungry or maybe not as hungry. So that's why we watch it.
Well, yeah, and the reason these things are happening is because there are developments that are happening in the baby's life where the world changes as he knows it, right? Mm-hmm. So he got used to the world being one way, and now he establishes more connections, neurological connections in his brain, and he has these growth leaps, and the world changes for him. So he just hit, and right before these things happen, like Nicole said, he'll get fussy because he's getting used to this new world now that he just got comfortable in, and it can make him act different. So in this second leap, he is now that he just hit, he is seeing patterns now. His senses are really, you know, he can feel these patterns, see these patterns, and they say you can even like taste these different patterns and these sensations. So, I put this thing on YouTube, the other day that helps babies kind of enhance those things, right? So it's contrasting colors. And I put it on the TV, and it was fascinating me, like when I turned it on, and it just a bunch of different bright colors on a black background, and it's just moving on the TV. And then I look over at Arrow, and he is just in heaven. I mean, you could see it's like he's never experienced this thing before. You're seeing him experience these feelings and these sensations for the first time, and he's just sitting there in awe looking at the TV screen. And it was like a really, really awesome moment. Like you'll never be able to experience that until you have a kid and you're watching these things happen. And now I'm experiencing that, and it's such a crazy but awesome feeling.
So not really a blooper, but a baby, what's another B word that's really cool? Baby.
We'll work on it.
Yeah.
But no, and that's cool. And I guess in this sleep as well, he's going to realize that the hands, well, he's going to realize that he has hands and that he can move these hands.
I think he already knows that because when he grabs my tatas when he's eating, he squeezes that thing so it comes out faster.
So now he's doing, now he's doing movements that are more intentional.
Yes.
And they say when you see his movements and he's noticing his hands, you'll start to see him move a little bit more robotic because he's learning these movements that are his. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just...
That's the little things when you have a baby. It's just the tiniest thing. His giggle, he's laughing and smiling with, like, when he sees our faces, when he hears my voice, I'll have to say, hi, baby. And he just gets, he lights up. It's like so cute.
Yeah. Obviously, you can tell that we are in awe of our child, obviously. But it's, you know, I now understand what all parents have gone through at one point. Mm-hmm. And the people that are listening that don't have kids yet, you'll know how mm-hmm. that feels when you get there, because we had no idea. People tell you, but it doesn't really do it justice until it happens to you.
And I was already packing up his newborn clothes because he's in 0 to 3 months. And I was like, I'm so sad. Look how little this is. And he's, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be a wreck when he actually becomes like a teenager. And there's just like a one little sock sitting on, did you see that over there? On the one little sock on the desk over there. And I took a picture of it and I was like, I'm going to miss these days. Like,
that reminds me of like a Goofy movie when he's like going to college yeah. and he's like packing the whatever clothes is left over and yeah. there's one sock that he just folds up.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a, and I took a picture. I'm like, look at that tiny sock. Like, I don't even care that there's just a little sock right there. It's so cute. And what happens when we don't have a baby to have little socks? We still got a while, but the 2 month stage is so much fun. And I'll be honest, I was scared to have more children after a newborn because I was like, he's so little. My gosh, I don't know if I can do this because, I mean, I care about this human so much, but now I'm like, okay, I'm back to wanting 4 kids again because this is so fun.
And speaking of babies and newborns, and we all know the difficulty of trying to get your baby to sleep when you get them back home for the first time and mm-hmm. just as they grow up, right? So we have a specialist on. She's a holistic sleep specialist. Her name is Taylor Kulik. And she gives you a whole new body of science and perspective mm-hmm. on what it means to actually get your baby to sleep. And it's not sleep training. So we hope you guys enjoy. So we'll just jump right in if you're okay with that.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. So for our listeners that may or may not know you, let's give them an intro of how you would describe yourself.
Sure. So my name is Taylor Kulik. I am an occupational therapist by trade. And when I became a new mom, I saw this huge lack of support for new moms, new parents. And specifically, I kind of just fell into the sleep world because my baby at the time and my second baby as well, but my babies don't sleep well. They've just never really slept well. They're like very highly sensitive. They've had like medical issues, tongue ties, things like this that have impacted their sleep. And so at the time, when my daughter was a newborn, I felt this intense pressure to sleep train. And it also didn't feel right to me. I didn't want to do it. I, you know, was researching, trying to figure out what do I do about sleep? How do I get her sleeping through the night? You know, all of the questions that a lot of new parents ask. And I did try some forms of sleep training. They just didn't feel right to me. I had to stop doing them. And I eventually started learning more and more about different options. So, you know, we like safe bed sharing. And then I got into holistic sleep support. So that's basically where I'm at now is I re-educate parents about what infant and child sleep actually looks like, what is developmentally appropriate. And I help support them to shift patterns responsibly and respectfully and really address sleep in a holistic way that is always responsive and really doesn't include any form of sleep training. So I'm here to support the families that don't want to sleep train or want other options. You know, and as a disclaimer, because I know there's probably a lot of different types of people and parents that listen to this podcast, you know, I never have judgment for parents who choose differently, who maybe do choose to sleep train. Like I just said, I did choose to sleep train my daughter and I didn't last very long. But I've made that decision. I totally get why parents make that decision. I also just want to be here to provide kind of the other side of the story, the other pieces of that conversation that I think are really missing when most people are talking about infant sleep and what that should look like.
And okay, and that's fair because when, and I'd say we were probably like a lot of parents.
So I've been a little bit rough on my hair lately because I just throw it in a bun I don't get to wash my hair as much as I want to because of having a baby. You know, I don't really get a lot of alone time. And so since I'm going so long between washes, I tried Way, which what this is, it's a shampoo that's detoxing your hair. So basically, you know, it's made with apple cider vinegar and a couple other things, and it's completely cleansing my hair. And after I used it, it was a lot less frizzy.
So you can reset your hair and scalp with the clarifying detox shampoo from Way. Use once a week to neutralize product buildup, oil, dirt, and hard water from your hair and scalp without stripping away moisture. A combination of apple cider vinegar and keratin exfoliates and balances your scalp, plus smooths frizz and creates a lustrous shine. It's great for all hair types, even hair treated with keratin, chemicals, color, or Brazilian blowout. And they have a signature fragrance that completely hides the smell of apple cider vinegar. Infused with their dreamy signature Melrose Palace fragrance with rose, bergamot, lychee, cedarwood, and white musk. When you're ready to undo some damage, hit the reset button with Way Detox Shampoo. Go to theouai.com and use the code COCO to get 15% off your entire purchase. Hey, that's theouai.com, code COCO. When we had Arrow, we brought him home and he wasn't sleep. I mean, he was sleeping, but he wasn't sleeping or he
wouldn't.
I think
it was more our fault. Did you turn me down, honey?
No, you're good.
Oh, okay. I think it was more of our fault because we like wanted to hold him the entire time for 2 weeks. And then Victor's like, we can't sustain this. Like, we can't keep doing shifts.
Well, and it wasn't even that. He just wasn't sleeping. Like, unless
we held him.
Yes.
Right. So then we were like, okay. Then one night Victor's like, okay, we got to like figure this out. And so then he started to look into like sleep training and it literally worked for one day. And then since then, Arrow's kind of just like told us when he wants to sleep. And so this is really interesting because I haven't, when you're looking this up, you're always like, these are the classes. This person can come help you. I haven't heard of what you're doing. And this is perfect for us because it's kind of what I've always wanted to do, but didn't feel like, I mean, it's definitely seems to be the unpopular thing.
Right.
And so I'm so intrigued on, I guess, what's behind this and what fuels this and you explaining it to our audience and to me.
Yeah. So the question is, where do I even start? So, you know, I think, like I said, so I kind of think of the support that I offer, the work that I do in terms of a pyramid. And at the bottom is the foundation. It's the knowledge that you first need to then move forward. And so that is my first goal, is to educate. And what that looks like is usually a form of re-education and basically unlearning what you think you know about how babies should be sleeping and relearning how they're meant to sleep. Because the truth is, and this isn't always a convenient truth to hear, it's not always a popular truth, but it is the truth, it is a fact, that babies are meant to be wakeful. They are by design meant to be near their caregiver, specifically their mother, but any caregiver. They are meant to nurse throughout the night or feed throughout the night, even in the case of bottle feeding or formula feeding. And there are reasons for that. They are meant to be wakeful. And so when we get past this erroneous idea that babies are meant to sleep like little adults. They just sleep well. They, you know, they may stir, but they put themselves back to sleep. They're not meant to do that. And that doesn't mean that no baby can do that. Babies are all different. So that's kind of, you know, the flip side of that is that yes, some babies are going to do just fine sleeping in their crib. Some babies are going to not signal as often at night and they'll maybe be better able to support themselves back to sleep. But that's not all babies. That's some babies. Some babies with more of an easygoing temperament. And so when parents with babies of, you know, not so easygoing temperaments or more high needs, highly sensitive babies hear these strategies and, you know, just put your baby down drowsy but awake and they should just fall asleep. And that doesn't work for them. It's enough to drive you crazy. And I know because I've had two babies who do not have easygoing temperaments. And so that's kind of the first layer, is unpacking everything we think we know about infant sleep and re-educating and helping parents to understand why babies are sleeping the way they are, why they're behaving the way that they are, and how attachment works. And so then the next layer of this will kind of be to assess, you know, and this is just like what I would do if I'm working with parents, or, you know, I have e-courses that kind of walk you through this too. So the next layer is kind of trying to assess, is my baby sleeping typically? Is what they're doing typical of a baby of their age? And most of the time, the answer is probably yes. That doesn't mean that it's always easy for parents. But most of the time, the answer is yes. Now, sometimes there are reasons that babies are not sleeping well, and we can work to explore the root cause of those sleep disturbances or sleep disruptions or excessive wakes. And sleep training does not address that issue. So that's something that's really important to understand, is kind of conventional mainstream sleep training approaches. It's just one size fits all. It's more of a behavioral modification approach. And so what I mean by that is it's designed to modify a behavior, and that behavior is signaling or crying. That is literally what, and I'm talking non-responsive sleep training. Everybody kind of has a different idea of or definition of what sleep training is and what all it encompasses. But I'm really talking here about non-responsive sleep training. So that is leaving your baby alone to cry for any amount of time. And so what was I saying? I just lost my train of thought. But so sleep training doesn't actually address any underlying issues that are causing sleep challenges or sleep problems. So that's what I do, is I ask all of these questions. Let's talk about the day. Let's talk about the activities that your baby is doing. Let's talk about, how they're feeding, how they're eating, depending on their age. Let's talk about any sensitivities they have, the sleep environment. Are you following their cues and their wake windows? You know, are you putting them to bed too soon or too later? You know, whatever. And so all of these things have the potential to impact sleep. There are medical issues that are commonly impacting sleep with babies. And when we tell parents, you just need to sleep train, we're really just glossing over those issues. And that is one of my biggest pet peeves, is I often work with families of babies who have like feeding issues, tongue ties, food sensitivities, things like this, and they're causing sleep problems, and their pediatrician will just tell them, you just need to sleep train. And so what does that do? It's like putting a Band-Aid over an issue instead of actually looking at the root cause and addressing it. So that's kind of the middle layer. Mm-hmm. So figuring out, is there anything that we have control over as parents that we can support our baby, help them to feel safe, help them to feel secure, and support them with sleep? Now, the very top layer, I think I'm calling it a layer, but I'm kind of thinking in terms of like a pyramid, mm-hmm. is assuming that all of those underlying issues are addressed. Sometimes parents run into challenges where, you know, maybe they're doing something, they're supporting their child in a way that just no longer works for them for whatever reason. So an example of this might be, you know, a parent is having to rock their 2-year-old to sleep still, and it's just not working. They used to love it, but it just doesn't work anymore. We need to shift that pattern. And so the top layer is helping parents to responsibly and respectfully shift those patterns of how we support babies and children to sleep, while still being responsive. And so this is kind of another layer where we're looking at emotion, we're looking at the relationship between the child and the caregiver, and we're placing those things as a priority, you know, knowing that there's nothing wrong with emotion, there's nothing wrong with crying. It's okay for our children to express themselves in their tears, but there's a difference between leaving your child alone to do it and being there to support and walk your child through it and being their calm presence. And one other thing that I didn't mention, but this is super important when we're talking about this, is this idea of self-soothing or self-regulating, and that we have to teach a baby to self-soothe. That is a myth. And I know a lot of people have a hard time hearing that, but babies are actually not capable of self-regulating. Mm-hmm. The doctor who came up with this term of self-soothing was actually doing a study, and he was looking at the behaviors of babies. And his definition of self-soothing was actually just a baby who wakes and puts themselves back to sleep. without crying, without signaling. And so there are kind of these two camps of major two camps of babies. One camp, they are self-soothers. They are more likely to kind of wake and they put themselves back to sleep. These might be those more easygoing babies. The other group of babies tend to signal more often. So they usually need more assistance to get back to sleep. They're going to cry. And so that's more of a temperament or a personality trait. It's not really something that you can train your baby out of. Mm-hmm. And so when like people that do sleep training are talking about you need to teach your baby to self-soothe, they're actually not talking about self-soothing. They would be more correct to say self-regulation. And what self-regulation is expecting a person, right now we're talking about babies, but expecting a person to come down from like a dysregulated state. Their nervous system is in a state of dysregulation. They're upset, they're crying. Expecting that person to come down to this calm, regulated state on their own. And what we know from lots and lots of research and an understanding of how development happens and how the brain works is that babies cannot self-regulate. They are actually designed for co-regulation. Mm-hmm. And what co-regulation is essentially, this is a very simplistic way of looking at it, but essentially it is they are borrowing the calm from their adult, calm, responsive caregiver. So they are literally using our body, our calm, our brain to calm themselves down. And in doing that, in helping them to co-regulate, that means we're there next to them, doing it, holding them, supporting them. In doing that, we are giving them the skills to self-regulate. But this takes time. It takes years and years, thousands and thousands of repetitive experiences of co-regulation. And so that's a huge piece of this conversation that we have to understand is that a lot of what we're asking our baby to do when we're sleep training them, they are not actually capable of doing it. Sorry, I feel like I just talked for 15 minutes.
That's so interesting. And it makes me so sad to think, I mean, me just having my baby's 2 months today and just like with the minute he cries, I'm like right there. But a lot of people are like, wait till you have your second one. You know, you're not going to be like that. But I mean, I feel like I still will.
This episode is brought to you by Feels.
CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel, like stress, anxiety, and pain. Feels is a premium CBD that will help keep your head clear and make you feel your best. It's hassle-free, delivered right to your door. It naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover, no addiction. All you do is place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important and everyone's dose is different.
In fact, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. The Feels customer service team is dedicated to making sure you get the best use of your CBD. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel anytime. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/coco and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's Feels, feals.com/coco to become a member and get 50% off automatically taken on the first order with free shipping. feals.com/coco.
What I'm wondering is what is the negative effects of like letting a baby cry and self-regulate when they're not able to? Because a lot of, from what I understand, and my cousin and some other people, they did get like the sleep training and they would let them cry and cry. What does that do to the baby?
So this is kind of a tricky question because I don't like to make blanket statements. I don't like to make judgments. And, you know, this isn't like, I definitely don't want to make anybody feel bad. And some babies are going to be just fine. You know, probably lots of babies are going to be just fine if they're sleep trained. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I think it's better to look at what we do know. So we do know that babies are designed for co-regulation. We do know that they can't self-regulate. And there is some research that has shown that what's actually happening when we're leaving a baby to cry it out, basically, and what that means is that they're crying until they stop. That's like an extreme form of non-responsive sleep training. What actually happens when they stop crying and go to sleep is that their brain is self-preserving, basically. In order to preserve energy, their brain is shutting down. And so that's something that we want to avoid if at all possible. And I think that's really important just for parents to know, because really parents are sold a lie, the lie of self-soothing, the lie of you need to let your baby cry it out so they learn to self-soothe. It's not self-soothing. And again, I'm not saying any of this to make you feel bad if you've made that decision. I've made that decision before, but I think it's important to know what we're doing when we're doing it. And so in terms of like how that can affect our baby, you know, there's not really a lot of research about this because it would be unethical to do this kind of research. And a lot of the research that is more in support of sleep training is very flawed and very biased, And there's a lot of issues with that research. But so back to what I was saying, I think that it's more helpful to kind of look at what we do know about babies in terms of how they thrive, how their development thrives, how their brains develop, their attachment, et cetera. And what we know is that babies, literally, they are designed to anticipate a response from their caregiver. They are designed to signal to us when they have a need, and they are designed to co-regulate with us in their presence. And so we have to ask the question of, well, and which this is what you're doing, but what are the consequences of doing something that we know is not in alignment with optimal development? And we don't have all of those answers. You know, I can kind of hypothesize, and I talk to adults who, you know, remember their sleep training experiences when they were a baby, and they would claim that they have PTSD from it. It can cause trauma. Now, I'm saying that like with a huge disclaimer that I'm not saying that that sleep training will traumatize your baby, and that it absolutely will cause trauma, because trauma is so complex and it depends on so many factors. It depends on the personality of the child. It depends on the rest of their days. You know, how are they being responded to during their day? What is their upbringing like? What is their, you know, there's so many variables. But it can, like, I have talked with lots of adults who feel traumatized by being sleep trained. And so I hope that answers your question. I'm cautious to like say anything other than that because, you know, it's just tricky. I don't want to make vast judgments about what sleep training does or doesn't do.
Yeah. And I won't lie. So when I heard that you were a holistic sleep, a sleep specialist, I was a little skeptical, and I wouldn't have been doing my job for this podcast had I not did some research on you. And then I did some research on the person that you base a lot of your, I saw on your page that you base a lot of your information and research from as well, is Dr. James McKenna. Is that correct?
So Professor James McKenna, it's a little bit different. So I talk about a lot of things. Professor James McKenna is an expert and a researcher when it comes to safe bed sharing, specifically the breastfeeding, you know, breastfeeding, bed sharing, mother-baby dyad. And so he doesn't talk as much about sleep training and like what I do, but yes, I do get a lot of information from him about bed sharing.
What I was going to say is when I was looking up his information, he was echoing what you were just saying, that babies are born needing their mothers, right? And that contact, and something as simple, well, I guess it's not simple, but something like SIDS, for example, that's not known regularly in the rest of the world, is something as easy as the exchange of oxygen between the mother and the baby, and those gases exchange. So if the baby can feel that, he can change his breathing pattern, or they can change their breathing pattern, right?
Yeah.
Or they can realize, oh, you know, that's like a fail safe. Hey, I got to breathe. She's breathing. I'm breathing. We're breathing together. And that, you know, also how he was saying stuff like, you know, there's no such thing as a bad baby or a good baby for not sleeping, that up until before anything before 6 months isn't a want, it's a need. They need these things. And so the more I was reading about that, the more it made sense to me. And it's just, it sucks that when you look up information online, I'd say a good 90% of the information, especially in that first page, I'd say 100% of it is about, you know, self-soothing and sleep training and getting them on a schedule and doing all these things that, you know, may not necessarily be the best interest of, you know, your baby. So I was skeptical. I did my research, and I am open to change. And I will say that after reading his body of work and the stuff that he was doing in his lab too, with the bed sharing and co-sleeping, that it was very compelling information.
And I will say that Taylor, Victor and I are we're like completely different. He's all about schedule and I'm all about, I'm the holistic approach. And so it's really good to have you on this podcast to kind of share with not only my husband, but our audience, like the other side of things and that's why I'm so excited. And I'm like, have so many questions and I'm so intrigued. And also like about I'm sorry, Vic, did I cut you off?
No, you're good.
The bed sharing thing, like, can we get to that? Because that's something that I do breastfeed around 7 a.m. every morning. Arrow is ready to breastfeed, and he will not lay down unless he's like, we're laying down together, and he's breastfeeding, and that's how he wants to lay for like an hour to 2 hours. And so I'll lay there and I'll just like make sure he's okay. But I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like what if I fall asleep? And oh my gosh, am I a bad mom for even like letting this happen? And so, you know, my eyes, I'm staying like wide awake, making sure that everything's okay. But at the same time, I'm just like, I know this is what calms him and soothes him. And it feels like, you know, like you're not actually, I feel like as a mother, you have like this instinct where you couldn't fall asleep, like even if you were super, I mean, you're so tired, but you're just like, my whole being has changed since being a mom where, I mean, the slightest move or the slightest noise of him, I'm like, wait, what, you know? So I guess I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Victor was just talking about Professor James McKenna, who is one of the world's experts on breast sleeping is what he calls it, which is breastfeeding and bed sharing. And, you know, if anybody's really interested in this, I'm happy to talk about it, but I would highly recommend looking at his website. It's cosleeping.nd.edu. And he also has some great books. So one of them, I have in front of me right now, cause it's like my most used book, is called Safe Infant Sleep. And he basically talks all about bed sharing and the research behind it and what we got wrong, because, you know, right now the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends basically no bed sharing ever. Mm-hmm. And, it's this huge, like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just like a no-no. Like you don't talk about bed sharing.
Stigma.
Well, when I go into the pediatrician, stigma. Like one of the four questions they ask is, are you co-sleeping? Like immediately. Right. And it's just like, okay, you're not, right? And you're like, no.
Right.
Like, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, this is one of my biggest passions, and not that I think all families need to bed share. That's not my view at all. I want to support and advocate for families to know that bed sharing, safe bed sharing can be an option and to have access to safe bed sharing information. I know that bed sharing isn't right for every family, but it can help. It helps so many families. You have no idea how many families, and I'm a bed sharing family, we're a bed sharing family, but I've had the opportunity to interact with so many families, probably thousands of families who safely bed share, and it has saved their lives. It has either saved their lives literally because they were in the midst of this depression, like horrible depression or sleep deprivation, or it's just helped them with their mental health. Or it was the only way that they could get their baby to sleep, because some babies don't sleep in their crib. And so I'm this huge advocate for bed sharing, and specifically, like I said, just for parents to know that it's an option and it doesn't need to be vilified. Families forever have been bed sharing with their babies. And even if you really think about it, if you really talk to other cultures, people around the world, lots of cultures around the world still bed share. Really, this idea of solitary infant sleep, putting your baby in another room alone in their crib, is a very new idea, and it's a very Western-centric idea. Most people have not had access to these huge homes with multiple bedrooms, enough bedrooms for everybody, until recently. It's very Western-centric. Even now, people in other cultures, a lot of them don't have these huge houses with lots of spaces. I always use this as an example. My husband is from Poland and he moved to the States when he was 7. But he tells me that, you know, they were living in this small apartment with his family. So his mom, his dad, his two sisters, and his grandparents until they moved here. And he bed shared with his grandfather until they moved here. And he told me that they wouldn't have had a room in their apartment for a crib if they had had a baby at that time. Like if, you know, he had had a baby sibling. And a lot of people don't have room for cribs in their little apartments or little homes that they live in. And so it's very interesting. And I think that's the first point that I like to make is, you know, if you really think that bed sharing is so crazy and so dangerous and the only right way is crib sleeping, you really just have to take about 25 steps back and look at the bigger picture, because people have been bed sharing forever and it is the biological norm.
And I'm going to just interject on that train of thought. I was listening to Freakonomics Radio, great podcast, economists talk about all things, but from the numbers and facts side, and they brought up bed sharing. And they said, you know, there is a huge stigma about it and whatnot. But at the end of the day, the effects of your health as a parent that can't get your kid to sleep in a bassinet or in a crib is worse for you when the studies show that the actual bed sharing, unless you're, you know, the factors that obviously increase the numbers is smoking or drinking that make it very dangerous. But outside of those factors, it's actually not dangerous if you take the right precautions. Equally, when people say, oh, you know, I'll just get out of the bed and I'll sit on the couch with the baby and maybe he can maybe sleep on my chest and then you end up falling asleep, that ends up being more dangerous had you just stayed in your bed and just co-shared the bed.
So 100%. What's the difference between... Like, Victor, what were you saying?
Co-sleeping is the bassinet. Bed sharing is them actually being in the bed for you, right?
Yeah, so co-sleeping is a more broad term that can include bed sharing. So bed sharing is more specific. It is a type of co-sleeping. But co-sleeping is any form of sleep where the baby is near you. So you can also do, like, separate surface, like Victor, you were saying, having your baby sleep next to your bed in a crib or a bassinet. Mm-hmm. But co-sleeping includes any form of baby sleeping with you, while bed sharing is very specific.
Gotcha.
And Victor, you brought up some amazing points. So the research that these governing, you know, organizations, the AAP, et cetera, have used to say parents should just never, ever bed share is very biased. And what happens when you actually look at this research, you will find, like you said, that there are major risk factors, specific risk factors that increase risk of bed sharing. And that is smoking. What was the other one you said?
Drinking.
Smoking, drinking, and then, of course, being in just a generally unsafe environment. So parents who are under the influence, lots of blankets, pillows, things around that can cause suffocation. Sleeping on a couch, sleeping on a chair with your baby, those things are never safe. And the problem with this research is that it lumps all forms of same surface cove sleeping into the category, the label of bed sharing. And so this research, if you look at it, they won't differentiate between safe bed sharing circumstances versus unsafe bed sharing circumstances. So there could be an infant death from a mother who was sleeping with her baby on the couch and her baby got trapped between the cushions, and that counts as a bed sharing death. And you can also recognize this if you hear about co-sleeping or bed sharing deaths in the news. It's very rare that you will hear about the specific scenario, the specific situation. Was the parent under the influence? Were they sleeping on the couch? And those things matter. So there's been more research done, and Professor James McKenna has a lot of this on his website and in his book that I mentioned earlier. But this research shows that there is no real statistical significance in terms of safety for safe bed sharing and safe crib sleeping, especially after the age of 4 months. But that is when all of the safety factors are accounted for. And the problem with this is that most parents are not being given safe bed sharing information. And so what that means is that we have desperate parents who their baby will not sleep in the crib, and they end up falling asleep in the rocking chair, falling asleep on the couch, falling asleep in a bed that is not set up for safety because nobody has told them anything except for you cannot bed share because it is so dangerous. Mm-hmm. That was me. Like, I was falling asleep rocking my newborn, standing up rocking my newborn, or sitting on the rocking chair rocking her. that happened to me so often. And like you said, Victor, we're putting parents into even more and babies into more dangerous situations because we're not providing them with the information. And the truth is that nothing in life is risk-free. Yeah. Living life carries risk. And even, you know, these people like to put solitary crib sleeping on this pedestal and act like it has no risk. And it's totally, you know, the one right way to do things. And that's just not true either. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't crib sleep. I think crib sleeping is great and works great for many families. But to act as though it has no risk is just crazy. I mean, there are risks because like we talked about, sorry, go ahead.
And if we're gauging risk, you're putting yourself and your child more at risk by driving in a car than right. bed sharing or crib sleeping right. or just being in your house in general.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point. I bring that point up all the time. You know, if we really care about babies and parents and we want to totally eliminate all risks, we would tell them to just live in a bubble, live in their home and never leave. But we know that that's not possible and it's not realistic because in order to live life, sometimes we have to take risks that we deem appropriate of taking. And it is all about, life is all about risk benefit analyses. And for some families, they have to bed share. Or for some families, the benefits, because there are benefits, lots of benefits of bed sharing. For many families, those benefits outweigh the tiny risks of bed sharing. And so, yeah, I just think it's so interesting because in kind of vilifying bed sharing and parents who bed share, we are creating more unsafe situations for families. The Lullaby Trust Foundation, they're based out of the UK, but they have some really recent interesting research, and they show, I think the number is that I think 90% of co-sleeping deaths would be prevented by providing parents with safe co-sleeping information.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, it should be about risk mitigation because we cannot avoid risk 100%.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel comfortable sharing what like some benefits are to bed sharing? Or,
yeah. So, and you know, I would definitely say if you do feel like you want a bed share or that's something mm-hmm. that you are doing, definitely go to Professor James McKenna's website and mm-hmm. look at the safe bed sharing guidelines. Make sure you're doing it safely because that is important.
Right.
But there are lots of benefits. So Victor talked about some earlier when he mentioned that, you know, a parent sleeping next to baby, specifically mom sleeping next to baby, helps them to establish and regulate their breathing patterns. So there is a physiological interaction that goes on between mother and baby with breathing, with temperature regulation. So bed sharing with mom can help baby regulate temperature. Mm-hmm. The breastfeeding relationship. So we know based on research that breastfeeding decreases risk of SIDS, and the bed sharing breastfeeding relationship is the biological norm. That doesn't mean that you can't have a breastfeeding relationship and have your baby sleep in the crib. But a lot of parents, moms do find that, their baby is nursing frequently through the night and bed sharing facilitates the breastfeeding relationship. And a lot of parents, this is something I get all the time, if they have tried to sleep train their baby at, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 months or however old, they do often find that the breastfeeding relationship suffers and their supply drops because they are often what sleep training includes is somehow limiting night feeds. And that affects the breastfeeding relationship. So those mm-hmm. are just a couple of benefits. I mean, there are really so many because it's just, babies and moms are meant to sleep next to each other. They really are.
Yeah. And it also said that it was also affects their growth rate, obviously, which makes sense because of the less breast milk they're having, mm-hmm. their blood pressure and their body temperature. I guess you said the body temperature and stress levels.
Yeah, absolutely. You've done your homework.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And do you have an opinion on swaddles at all when babies sleep, like swaddling a baby?
I don't have, swaddling should never be done while bed sharing. So that's right. A big safety thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't have any major opinions. I think I have seen both sides. I have seen opinions, professional opinions on both sides. I tried to swaddle my first child and she's 4 now. I also have a 16-month-old and I never swaddled him. So at that time I decided against swaddling because my personal preference is to allow my babies to the opportunity to move freely as much as they can. Mm-hmm. One of the potential concerns with swaddling is if you're doing it too tightly around the hips, it can cause some hip issues. But then there's also some newer concerns that I haven't really seen research that supports it, but as an OT, like it kind of makes sense to me, just like the hypothesis. So mm-hmm. one of the newer concerns that some people are talking about is, so to back up a little bit, the reason that we swaddle is because babies are born with something called a startle reflex. Mm-hmm. If you have ever had a baby, you probably know what this is. And so that swaddle stops their startle reflex. And specifically at night, it can be helpful because otherwise they're just kind of startling themselves all night long and waking up all night long. The problem is for that reflex to be integrated, they do need to actually have the reflex happening. And so it's kind of just like this developmental norm. Like the reflex goes off and it helps them to integrate it. So the potential problem is that if your baby is constantly swaddled, especially at night and for long periods of time, that reflex isn't activating. It could potentially interfere with the integration of that reflex. And by integration, I mean, it goes away. It basically they work through it and it goes away and they stop having this reflex. And so that's a potential problem. I have worked with babies before who were swaddled like a lot, like they were swaddled all night and even much of the day for months. And, I've worked with them and I could tell that they still, like their parents would say, they still have their startle reflex a little bit beyond when we would expect it to integrate normally. So, my recommendation is normally if your baby likes to be swaddled in those early days, I would say you can do it. I wouldn't force it on your baby because a lot of babies actually don't like to be swaddled and they'll kind of break free of it. But specifically when they're really stressed, maybe during the day, if they're crying or they're really stressed, you can swaddle them. But I would recommend not swaddling them for very long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And then also only utilizing the swaddle for maybe a few weeks, and then trying to kind of wean from it within the first month or two.
Okay, perfect. We'll start weaning. It was something that Arrow didn't like. And then our pediatrician was like, you need to get him to like swaddle. So we're like, okay. And then we bought the weighted swaddle.
Bamboo. And weighted.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my.
From the mountains of heaven.
But when I wake up for night feedings though, like his arm will be out or he'll wiggle out. So I think he's over it. And I mean, it's kind of relieving. I didn't know which way you would be, but relieving to hear like it's okay to not swaddle him because it was just
definitely.
Like he needs to like swaddles. I'm like, okay, Victor, let's just like get him to like swaddles. But yeah, we'll be done with that now.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, I'm pretty neutral about a lot of things. Like I have strong opinions on my own, but I feel like do what you need to do as a parent, make the decisions that you want to make, even if they're different from mine. What I really have a problem with is people, especially pediatricians and other healthcare professionals, telling parents, you must do this. You have to do this. You do not have to swaddle. Swaddling is optional. You are not going to harm your baby if you don't swaddle. Well, I also am not a big believer that you're going to harm your baby if you do swaddle. I think do what works for you and for your baby. And the one thing, the major concern with swaddling is you do want to stop swaddling sometime by I say within the first 2 months, but especially by like 8-10 weeks, because you don't want to have them in a swaddle when they first start rolling, because that could be dangerous.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah.
And he's already, he's rolled twice during the day.
From his stomach to his back,
right?
Not from his back
and
to his back.
Well, the reason that he, like, the doctor convinced me is because he's like, well, he's going to just claw his eyes out. I'm like, okay, yeah. I don't want him to claw his eyes out with his hands. So
he's
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, he's not going to claw his eyes out.
No. Thank you. Victor, do you have anything that you want to finish up with, or you have any more questions?
No, I'm happy that you came onto our radar as a guest because I
follow you now on Instagram because I like love your content. I can tell it's something that I'm going to want to see all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, sorry, Victor, finish your thought.
No, because I otherwise would not have researched you or this, this information. I listen to a lot of podcasts and I get a lot of great information there on my drives, but this is something that, I mean, unless I randomly found it one day on a podcast, I probably wouldn't have looked up. So I'm very appreciative that you're doing this work and helping families. And let our listeners know your website and what you offer on that site and where they can find you.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you guys so much for having me on. was a pleasure. You can find me. So I'm mostly on Instagram. My handle is Taylor Kulik. That's K-U-L-I-K is how you spell my last name. And then my website is www.taylorkulik.com. I offer comprehensive e-courses. I have an infant sleep course and a toddler sleep course, no sleep training, all attachment focused and breastfeeding friendly. I also offer like rotating lower cost webinars on a variety of topics. So I have like two webinars every month and I kind of rotate topics. I also have a podcast. It's called Let's Sleep On It, Reclaiming Parenthood. And it's I talk about sleep, but it's not just about sleep. It's also just about parenthood in general and like those kind of like parenting against the grain, like topics that are not so mainstream and doing things differently. Mm-hmm. I do have a team member. I don't currently myself offer one-to-one consultations anymore, but I do have a team member. Her name is Jen. And so if anybody needs one-to-one support, she does offer that. And she has the same kind of sleep training or not sleep training, but sleep education as I do. And she offers support in the same way that I do. So I think I listed everything. That's pretty much where you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. And we cannot wait for our audience to hear this. And we hope to have you back sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that'd be amazing. Thank you guys so much.
Okay, thanks. Have a good night.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I really love that episode, and I just want to apologize for cutting you off sometimes, Victor. But no. It's not often, I will say, it's not often you that I want to talk.
You were very excited.
With a guest because I get like nervous and stuff, and I am sick. And so the fact that I still wanted
yeah,
to
Nicole
talk.
Yeah, before we even started the episode, she's like, today I'm probably just going to sit back and just let you. And then as soon as she started hearing the things that, you know, kind of, oh, that she was, you know, that she thought, mm-hmm. were right, but in her mind, after reading everything online, she thought she was wrong.
Right.
You know? Yes. And so she got excited and she's like, oh, she's hitting all the points that I was mm-hmm. thinking of myself as a mom.
Because me, I'll be honest, I didn't get to like prepare for this episode like I wanted to. I was like, Victor, make sure you prepare and read up on this stuff because mm-hmm. I feel like crud. And so then I was like, oh, dang, like I'm hearing this for the first time. And so, you know, I'm asking all the questions as if like, I didn't know and I wanted to know more.
Absolutely.
Like, so I do apologize for cutting you off because that is super annoying.
I do that to you all the time. So
but
it's okay.
I just never really get excited. And now that I have a baby, I'm like, I gotta know this information. And I hope you guys really enjoyed it because it's a whole different perspective than what, like Victor said, that you find online. Goes against everything that Victor and I found after 2 weeks of having Arrow. And so now for our next baby, we won't push the stuff maybe as much as hard and, mm-hmm. and we'll be able to feel like, okay, we want to do what's best for us. And thank you guys.
And what he needs, not what he needs. Not what we think he wants.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Is that how it is? Yeah.
Yeah. Up to 6 months, you said it's about what they need.
Because they're not wanting for anything. They need stuff.
Totally. And, yeah. And you know what? Last night I was like watching the owlet while I was in bed and his heart rate got down to 89 and I was like, oh my God, like this seems really low. But I looked up 80 to like 160 is normal for a 2 month old. But I think he was just so relaxed because, you know, I'm right there.
Yeah.
And when I'm not in the room, it'll go up more. But it's like, dang, I don't want you to be that relaxed. Like, make sure. I mean, his oxygen was good and stuff too. But it's so funny how even when everything's like perfect, you're still like, oh my God, it's too perfect.
So my favorite time to be with Arrow, and I love when he's awake, obviously, but I think some of my favorite times is when I'm laying on the couch just watching TV mm-hmm. and he falls asleep on my chest because mm-hmm. that's just, for me, it feels like such an intimate moment with me and him, right? Mm-hmm. And now hearing that he feels my breathing patterns mm-hmm. and the calmness that I have, obviously he feels and totally. I don't think I ever see him. I mean, obviously with you and he breastfeeds and he knocks out, but with me, that's the most calm I ever see him, right? Even just sleeping in general, he doesn't move, he doesn't fuss, he doesn't anything, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, your heart rate's like freaking 50 beats per minute.
Actually, my sleeping heart rate is in the 40s sometimes.
Yeah, so that's kind of scary, honey. I don't want him to match your heart rate, okay?
It's a healthy heart rate. I exercise regularly.
Wait, shoot, you were going to make me say something that was really good, and now I forgot.
Let me get your train of thought back. On my chest, peaceful, calm, intimate moment, baby, relaxed.
Oh, got it. It's because it's also crazy where he might start crying when he's napping, but the minute like you or I enter the room, he can feel our presence, and he's like,
stops.
It's like, okay, I'm okay. Like, you don't even have to pick him up. He's like, all right, they're here.
And sometimes I feel bad, especially now that we talked to her and I did the research that I did. You know, sometimes when he's crying, when I lay him down, I'll do that. I'll just walk in the room and he stops and I'm like, oh, he's fine.
Then you walk
and then I walk out and I sit back down, then he starts crying again. But when, the second time I go up and I grab him, but, you know, I should just grab him the first time.
Yeah, I don't, you know what I mean? Which I'm just like grateful for the information, even though we got it a little, I mean, 2 months, that's not that late.
No.
And I'm really grateful to give it to our audience as well.
Yeah. And it's like she said, if doing
either way is fine,
doing it the other way is not bad, right? It's not that you're making the wrong decision, because if it works for you, it works for you. But if it's not working for you, there's another option. You know, but anyway,
yep.
We really hope you guys enjoyed. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. The easiest way is on Apple Podcasts. You can find that online or on your phone. You can listen to this podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. That'd be Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. And you can always go to www.cococalientepodcast.com and you can check out our merchandise there. Please don't forget to follow us at Coco Caliente Pod on Twitter and at Coco Caliente Podcast on Instagram. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to be the most interesting person at the cocktail party, well, hop on over and listen to the Brain Candy Podcast.
Our award-winning content will have you laughing while you're learning.
We read all the best articles, books, and studies, and keep up with new TV shows, documentaries, and pop culture. And then we cram it all into two shows a week.
Conspiracy theories, cannibal rabbits, unsolved mysteries, the history of the Walkman. There's something for everyone.
The Brain Candy Podcast. Find our link in the show notes.
Or simply search for the Brain Candy Podcast on your podcast app.